Hey, everybody. We're coming to you from the Vancouver Island Convention Center here in beautiful Nanaimo, British Columbia for the Western Cities HR Conference. And our guest is Carolyn Stern. Carolyn is an emotional intelligence expert, strategist, a coach, author of the book, The Emotionally Strong Leader, and an emotional intelligence powerhouse. Bam.
Bam. Mic drop.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I should also mention that you are very well known to our municipal world and a great friend to municipal world through you've done a webinar, you've done podcasts, you've written articles. So thank you for that. Very popular, all of them.
Thank you very, very much. I've enjoyed it. We actually did two webinars last year. We're doing a couple more this year. You had me on the cover of one of your editions. So no, I really love
your whole content creating force.
And at the conference, we even had some magazines.
We brought them.
They all got eaten up.
They got snatched.
They got snatched. Yes.
So welcome. How is the conference going so far for you?
Fantastic. Loved it. Loved the energy. I opened the conference. We really started talking about my new model, which is in my new book coming up, which has yet to be released. But the model is the high EI way, which means how do you always take the high road, even when those emotionally charged situations happen at work? How do you always make sure your emotions don't get the best of you and you always take.
Well, you know, you really put yourself out there with that keynote because you gave an example of where
yes.
your class, because you're also a business professor, your class wasn't paying attention and you kind of, you know, trashed them basically.
Well, Bob, you're making it sound worse than it was, but the story,
but you checked yourself.
I checked myself. The story was I got three emails from three students 10 minutes before the last class saying they couldn't come to class, whether it was, I'm sick, my dog ate my homework, I can't come, but I was angry.
Yeah.
And my last name, as you know, is Stern, and I stomped into my classroom very abruptly and was stern and took out my emotions from those three students onto the students in the class.
Right.
And what I teach in this model is you've got to zoom out.
Yes.
You've got to look from above and go, wait, what am I doing here? And when I did that halfway through the class, I went, I'm angry at the wrong students. These are the brave ones that showed up. And I did what the students didn't think I would, which is I apologized.
Right.
In the moment when I realized by zooming out and going, wow, I'm angry at the wrong students and I'm taking it out on the wrong students. When I apologized, the thing that I thought would break their trust changed it. They actually trusted me more. They were shocked that their professor would acknowledge her mistake publicly.
Right.
And it changed. They stayed actually extra half an hour on a Friday afternoon with their teacher because for 13 other weeks, I was a pretty kind and compassionate teacher.
Yes.
And I think the moral of the story that I shared was, you got to know your triggers. So one of my triggers is dishonesty.
Yes.
Now, where does dishonesty come from? Well, growing up as a kid, my dad wasn't very truthful. And so when those three students sent me those emails, it had very little to do with the emails and had everything to do with my daddy issues. And
right.
So what I try to teach people is your triggers at work tend to be based on when your values are compromised.
Right.
And so for me, dishonesty is a big trigger.
For sure.
And one of the things I asked in the keynote was, do you know your triggers at work? So I'm going to ask you, Greg, do you know what triggers you at work?
Oh, gosh, so much. I don't know. How much time do we have? It's only a 12-minute podcast.
But seriously, if you take a moment, what do you think your biggest trigger at work is?
It's speaking about myself.
Which is right now I'm triggering you?
You're triggering me.
And
Carolyn.
Okay, and why? And my second question, which I will make you stay on air, but I would get curious about why that's such a trigger.
Yes, good question. I think I need therapy. I think that's the bottom line.
But give me a call. I'm not a therapist, but
we could use you.
I know. I'm a workplace effectiveness coach.
Yes.
So I teach people how their emotional makeup, for good or for bad, might help or might be hurting them.
Right. So how does that theme then fit with the book that's coming out? Can you say the title of the book?
The book's still out there for grabs, but the model is called the High EI Way, and there's five steps.
Okay.
The first step is to recognize how you're feeling. So in this moment where I triggered you by asking you a question, what are you feeling?
I'm feeling uncomfortable, embarrassed, want to hide.
Okay, that's what you think.
Lie down.
Okay, those are all your thoughts, but you said the first, uncomfortable, embarrassed, so that's your feeling. The second step is to reflect on where those feelings come from. So what triggered that feeling? Maybe it's because I put you on the spot and I asked you a question on live TV, so that might be the trigger. The third step is to leave space between the trigger and your reaction. So instead of saying, screw you, Carolyn, I can't believe you asked me to.
I would never do that.
Okay, well, that would be unemotionally intelligent.
It's an HR conference after all.
That's true. Okay. But you might feel like you want to tell me screw off. But the bottom line is to regulate, to not let your emotions get the best out of you, to press pause.
Yes.
And then it's to reset. To calm down, gain perspective, restore emotional balance. Is your reality the reality? Maybe, why am I asking you this question? Why are you so triggered by that question? And the final step, once you've done all those inner steps, because by the way, you haven't opened your mouth yet. You've just been thinking internally. Yes. This is your inside voice. The final step is to respond respectfully and professionally.
So this being a conference, one of the big advantages is the ability to talk, to network with people. And I know this conference organizes extra time for that very purpose.
Yes.
It's not like you have 5 minutes to grab coffee and then back at it. They build in good networking and talking opportunities over, Nanaimo bars, for example, which are delicious here.
They are delicious.
In Nanaimo, British Columbia. But anyway, what are you hearing in the hallways when you're talking to people? I'm sure you got a great reaction from your keynote, and people are coming up to you. And what are the HR professionals here revealing about themselves?
So one of the things that I always ask people after they hear me speak is what resonated. And I'd say sort of the top two things that I'm hearing a lot of is, as HR professionals, not only are we managing HR, they're managing people's emotions. So all day long, they're dealing with, the angry employee, or the frustrated leader, or maybe a flustered resident, whatever they're dealing with, right? They're dealing with a lot of emotions. And so the problem is, when you are the caregiver, you tend to deplete your energy on everyone else because you're caring for everyone else. And a lot of HR professionals have high empathy. Well, the dark side of empathy, which means when you're overplaying a skill, because we think empathy is a good thing, but when it's overplayed, it can lead to compassion fatigue. You wear everyone's emotional burdens on your shoulders. So the number one thing I'm hearing is that HR people aren't taking care of themselves, right? Mm. When the plane's going down, you put the oxygen mask on yourself before you save the children.
Sure.
And so they realized after listening to my talk, and when I shared my own struggles, as even though I'm an EI expert, I still I'm a work in progress and a masterpiece at the same time, just like all of you. It is making sure they are taking care of themselves, giving themselves some time if they're overburdened, overworked, to pause, to reflect, to press the brake pedal, the rest and digest response. So that's one of the biggest things that I'm hearing. And the other thing that I ask them to think about is, when you walk into a room, just like with the example with those three students,
right.
I walked into a room. I didn't realize the emotional wake, like a boat leaves a wake, that I was leaving behind, right? The ripple effect of my energy, my words, my actions, that ripples onto the people around you. So I asked HR to ask their teams, how do you feel in my presence? Mm. And so that's a really great question that I encourage everyone to reflect on, is how do people feel in my presence? And, Maya Angelou said it best, right? It's not, people may forget what you said or did, but they will never forget how you made them feel. Mm. And so a lot of times, are we even aware? When we have the leadership title, we forget people, whether we realize it or not, people are watching you, what you say or don't say, what you do or don't do. So zooming out and kind of just thinking about how do people feel in my presence? Am I creating a psychologically safe environment? Am I solving too much of people's problems? Should I be, am I shielding them and I'm not even empowering them to figure out the answers themselves? So I'm being the problem solving hero. How do people feel in your presence? So by pressing pause and thinking about that, that was another big key takeaway from my talk.
Great. You know, having met you and interviewed you for the podcast and what have you, and I have your book, by the way. But what it has changed the way I analyze things, because when I consume a lot of news and when I'm reading the news, I'm always seeing examples. I go, that's a good example of emotional intelligence, or it's a bad example.
Yes.
And when we did the podcast previously, we were talking about the Disney CEO, and there was a succession at Disney, and the new CEO, they dumped him after about a year. But it was, but one of the main knocks against him was he had low emotional intelligence. So my takeaway there was, you know, don't wait until you're the CEO of a major corporation to start thinking about, I need some emotional intelligence. It's something that you need to be working at basically all the time.
That's right. And just like building muscles at the gym.
Exactly.
Emotional intelligence takes practice, right?
Yes.
So if I want to become more assertive and to speak up more in meetings, I need to practice that. And in the beginning, it's going to feel uncomfortable. But the more and more I do it, I build that muscle inside of me and to become stronger at that. And it's never too late to start. You know, our prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking part of our brain. But we also have that amygdala, our emotional part of our brain, which is a faster thinker. The problem is when I get triggered at work, like those three emails, my amygdala fires off. And what we're trying to do from an emotional intelligence perspective is to slow down that amygdala and not let it run you, but to get your thinking part of your brain to quicken up. So you press pause on the emotional part of our brain and get the thinking part of our brains acting smarter than that darn little amygdala, which, by the way, is only the size of an almond.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Interesting.
It has a lot of power over us.
So have you seen any examples that you've noticed in the media or that maybe helps to illustrate?
I like using the example from the CEO of Microsoft. I think it's Satya Nadella.
That sounds right. Nadella. Yeah.
And he was talking about performance matrix and wanted to have a kind of a town hall. But before they got into the metrics, he said, let's talk about the emotional toll that we've all been under. And he started with himself sharing what he himself had been struggling with. When a leader models that kind of vulnerability, it gives other people permission to do the same.
Right.
The reason I always stand on stage as the EI expert and start with my wobbly bits and the examples of when I wasn't emotionally intelligent,
right,
is it gives people in the audience to go, wow, if she's been studying this for 25 years and she still screws up, then it's okay that I did. And
for
when
sure.
we start to give people permission to say, I made a mistake, then, you know, just because you made a mistake doesn't mean you are in a mistake. And I think the key is a lot of people think when we make a mistake, we are the mistake. So the fact that he publicly shared in front of at his town hall that, hey, I'm having some emotional struggles. And what is the emotional toll you've been feeling over the last quarter?
Right.
I think was a great example of high emotional intelligence in action.
Great. Now, the HR professionals who are at the Western Cities Conference, they are on a day-to-day basis, they're dealing with some nuts and bolts stuff. You know, they're hiring, they're firing, they're collective agreements. It's not exactly all glamorous, but when those HR professionals hear your talk and start thinking in terms of emotional intelligence, what do you think the next step ought to be for them when they go back to their respective municipalities?
That's what I always say to everyone. After you've heard my talk, now that you know better, what are you going to do better? And so a lot of people have said, either I'm going to press pause, I'm going to zoom out. Some people have said, I'm going to ask better questions. A lot of times as leaders, we feel like we have to be the problem-solving hero. We feel like we have to have the answers. But if you come into my office and I just solve the problem for you, then ultimately what I'm saying is, I don't think you're capable, so let me do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to shield people. We want to support them. So the first thing, if you came into my office and said, Carolyn, what do you think I should do?
Yep.
The first thing out of my mouth should be, I don't know, Greg, what do you think you should do? Mm-hmm. We have to remember we're teachers. And as teachers, I know the answers to my students' tests, but I don't give it to them or else they're not learning. So as leaders, when someone comes into your office, ask questions. Don't be the problem-solving hero.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think this is a good time for us to break, but thank you so much. Oh, always a pleasure to talk to you, Carolyn. And thank you again for everything you've done for, first of all, Western Cities, but also Municipal World. If our viewers or listeners are Municipal World members, they can find your article, cover story, and your past editions of the podcast featuring you and view the webinar. So it's fantastic.
And I just wrote a new article for your publication, which I think is coming out in 2026, all on how to have a difficult conversation using emotional intelligence.
Fantastic. And we'll look for the book launch. When is that going to happen?
Hopefully 2026. We'll see. I'm still working. It's still a work in progress, but be on the lookout for it. But for sure, in 2026, I'll be running two webinars with Municipal World. So hopefully I'll see everyone there.
And the additional, the existing book.
The Emotionally Strong Leader, an inside-out journey to transformational leadership. It's out there. And they can get it either on my site, carolynstern.com, or through Amazon or any other retailer.
Fantastic.
Yes.
So,
awesome.
Okay. Well, thank you so much once again. And for everyone else, we'll see you next time on the podcast.
Thanks.